have a dream.
And we will make debate great again.
Let me just tell you how thrilling it really is and what a challenge it is because...
Too young, too simple, sometimes naive.
Now, I imagine that some of you might be wondering, well, why come here? Why would you choose this community? And the answer is simple.
As yesterday's positive report card shows, children do learn.
You are listening to the Contention One podcast. Time starts now.
Welcome to Contention One, China's leading cause of debate-related brain drain. I'm Coach Josh, and as always, I'm here with Coach Durkee.
Namaste.
Namaste. And we said on our last podcast that we were going to be doing each of the different parts of the immigration topic, and so we're bringing that to you first thing this week. We're going to begin with the brain drain part of the topic. That's our section today. And we're doing things a little bit differently. So it's not just our normal podcast, but also a video. Yesterday, we recorded a demonstration debate between me and Durkee, and a lot of our debaters came and watched and asked questions about that debate. And we're playing that for you today on the podcast, but you can also watch the video of it, and that's up on contentionone.com. But before we get into any of that, I guess we should probably tell the people what this brain drain thing is.
Okay, so there's a term in economics called human capital, which refers to the amount of skills and talents that a country's workers possess. And, of course, having talented and skilled and educated workers is really important in the contemporary global economy in order for your economy to function and certainly to grow and develop. And human capital flight, or brain drain, as it's more interestingly, popularly, and awesomely known, is the process in which a country loses some of its talented, skilled, and educated workers through immigration to another country. And, of course, it's no surprise that that will be a big part of this topic's debates. It's all over the literature. It's going to come up a lot. And so it's important for us to start right off talking about this issue. Those of you that are about to watch the debate, a suggestion is to just try to listen and flow the debate. During the video, you'll notice that we make fun of some of the audience who might have not been flowing. It's a good opportunity to practice your flowing skills. It will be a little bit challenging, though. Josh is especially, and maybe me too, talking a little fast on the video. And so if you're having a little trouble following along, don't worry about that. Just go and get the documents that are up on contentionone.com, as you said, and you can read along. We will have my contention, Josh's block, there for you, and some additional evidence to help you understand and get prepared to debate this topic.
That's right. I think I kind of overcompensated a little bit. I was a little long on the original video for my constructive speech, and so I went faster this time. So
he was afraid that I was going to whip him pretty good, so he had to get a lot of evidence in there.
So definitely go to contentionone.com and download those documents, and also keep checking back there because we're going to continue this series each week, adding more parts of the immigration topic and giving you more materials to hopefully help you win some debates. All right, enjoy our debate. Here we go. For too long, the immigration debate has been marked by high emotion and little knowledge. Today, we hope to change this by affirming the resolution resolved on balance legal barriers to immigration are more harmful than beneficial to society. To understand the resolution, we think on balance suggests a utilitarian calculation of impacts. In other words, the team who proves a benefit to the most people should win the debate. So, rather than just showing one or two instances where barriers to immigration are beneficial, the con must prove that across the world, more people are helped by legal barriers. On to the best contention, contention one, poverty alleviation. Subpoint A, the global poor. According to the United Nations, 836 million people live in extreme poverty. About 1 in 5 persons in developing regions lives on less than $1.25 a day. And this doesn't even tell the whole story because people can still struggle for access to adequate living conditions even without being in extreme poverty. As a recent analysis of the World Bank data by the Pew Research Center explains, the emergence of the truly global middle class is still more of a promise than a reality. The majority of the world's population, 56%,
continue to live in low-income existence. And as World Bank economist Branko Milanovic has found, 50 to 60% of income differences in the world is simply due to where people live. In other words, if you want to be rich, you'd better be born in a rich country or immigrate there. 20% is due to income levels of your parents, so your citizenship plus your parental background explains two-thirds or even 70% of your income. When it comes to enforcing the system and keeping people in limited productive abilities, the number one culprit is legal barriers to immigration. Barriers to immigration lock people into unproductive economies for generations with no chance of escape. As an elimination of barriers to immigration would cause a shift in world economic growth unlike anything we have ever seen before. Migration is more effective at bringing people out of poverty than any other form of aid. As economist Dr. Michael Clemens, senior fellow at the Center for Global Development, has found, researchers have built various models of the world economy to estimate the gains from eliminating barriers to trade, capital flows, and migration. The gains from eliminating migration barriers dwarf by an order of magnitude or two the gains from eliminating other types of barriers. For labor mobility barriers, the estimated gains are often in the range of 50 to 150% of world GDP, measured in tens of trillions of dollars. Subpoint B, solvency. There are two reasons why this works. The first is simply wages. As Sebastian Malaby, a Paul Volcker senior fellow for international economics at the Council of Foreign Relations, explains in 2006, the World Bank brokered a deal between Tonga and New Zealand. Tonga would satisfy New Zealand's unmet need for fruit pickers. The experiment increased the income of participating Tonga workers by a factor of 10, an increase that dwarfed potential benefit of any imaginable aid program. With this extraordinary leap, in income came improvements of everything from the quality of the workers' homes to the school performance of their children. There's an enormous benefit for immigrants who are able to get access to higher-paying jobs. Not only does it help the workers, but it also helps them remit money back home. As Sebastian Malaby explains, immigrants from developing countries remit around $440 billion annually to relatives at home, a transfer that is three times the size of total official development aid worldwide. Second is that it makes the economy overall more productive. As immigrants come in, not only do they take low-skilled jobs, allowing native workers to move to more specialized work, they create demand because they're people and they spend money. For instance, in the early 90s, Denmark took in refugees from Bosnia, Iraq, and Somalia. The officials in charge paid no heed to the skills or education when they allocated their jobs, and the damage did not materialize. As refugees came in, low-skilled native workers shifted to different jobs, and the number of low-skilled jobs in the economy increased. This means that contrary to what the con will say, this doesn't hurt native workers. We see this time and time again in empirical examples like South Africa, the most dramatic modern example of desegregation. With the fall of apartheid in 1994, black migrants who were exiled to remote areas flooded into major cities where they began competing with white workers for jobs. The average income of black South Africans rose by 61%, and white South Africans suffered, well, nothing. The average income also rose over the same period by a staggering 275%. Considering the damage to the world's poor that legal barriers to immigration enforce, we urge a pro ballot.
Very nice. I have no idea how long this is. Okay. All right. Ready? Like Josh, I only have one contention. Contention one, brain drain. A world without immigration barriers would seriously harm global development efforts because it would cause developing countries to lose their most talented, best and brightest workers through human capital flight, which is also known as brain drain. As Wong Kar-yu, professor and director of research at the Center for International Economics at the University of Washington, explained in 2009, quote, brain drain is the immigration of skilled workers such as engineers, scientists, doctors, nurses, and university professors from a country. These people immigrate legally and stay with no intention of returning. Many countries in Asia and Africa experience substantial outflow of skilled workers, both in absolute numbers and as a percentage of the initial stock of skilled workers. The big gaps between the wage rates in developed countries and developing countries make brain drain difficult to control. In fact, legal barriers are one of the few tools that the world can use to control the outflow of high-skilled workers from developing countries. As Kieran Oberman, a postdoctoral economics fellow at Stanford University, explained in 2012, quote, immigration restrictions help to prevent brain drain. If rich states chose to enforce immigration restrictions against skilled workers from poor states where brain drain is a problem, rich states would remove the main incentive these workers have to leave. Conversely, if rich states lift restrictions that prevent more skilled workers from coming, it would almost certainly worsen the problem. Given the cost that brain drain can involve, there seems to be a strong argument that immigration restrictions can be justified. Many examples illustrate this danger.
As the influential Belgian economists Lacroix and Dacquier said in 2010, quote, "It is fairly obvious that brain drain affects the economic performance of sending countries. The interdependence between high-skilled emigration and poverty can be a source of vicious and virtuous circles. A significant brain drain movement may have damaging effects on the economy and induce other waves of high-skilled emigration. History has shown that outflows of high-skilled people can generate economic damage, which is hard to reverse. An interesting case is that of Iran, where pre-revolutionary economic development was rapid. The Iranian brain drain started with the revolution, was exacerbated in the 1980s. The pace of growth slowed dramatically after the revolution, and Iran is still a lower middle-income economy to this day. And it's not just this isolated example. A 2013 study by economic professor Normaz Ismail, used cross-sectional data analysis of 90 developing countries to examine the impact of brain drain on human capital formation. Results indicate that developing countries' concerns are not unnecessary. Migration of skilled labor has become more unidirectional and relatively permanent. High-skilled migration, therefore, might exhaust skills from developing countries and impede their growth. These factors suggest a major benefit to immigration barriers. As Mihar Desai, a professor of finance and law at Harvard University, pointed out, quote, "Changed immigration policies have the potential to have sweeping impacts on the developing world where skilled individuals have been constrained by restrictive immigration policies. The decade of flows of human capital from India to the United States portend what the scope, magnitude, and consequence will look like. A selective immigration policy for skilled workers during the 1990s resulted in more than 1 million Indian-born individuals in the United States, more than doubling this population since 1990. Human capital outflows of this magnitude will make the country less attractive as a destination of foreign direct investment and stunt high technology. It may have deeply inimical consequences on a country's institutions, affecting its long-term development." Another example was pointed out in The Economist in 2016, which wrote that, quote, "Between 1990 and 2012, almost 20 million people moved from Central, Eastern, and Southeastern Europe to richer countries in Western Europe. This east-west migration accelerated after 2004 when 8 Eastern European countries, including Poland, the Czech Republic, and Hungary, joined the EU. The IMF researchers reckon that this exodus lowered the accumulation population growth in labor-sending countries by 8 percentage points. If those mostly young and skilled workers had stayed put, the gap within the EU in income per person would have been 5 percentage points narrower. For these reasons, we suggest a con ballot." Okay. The crossfire?
Yeah.
You guys ready? Judges ready? Opponent ready?
Yep.
Time starts now.
I guess I have the first question.
Sure.
You said that Asian and African countries see brain drain. What countries?
Many of them.
Like?
Let's see if my evidence specifies. Oh, you know, my evidence is from the Princeton Encyclopedia of the World Economy. This particular evidence doesn't list them. But, I mean, there's a lot.
Okay.
In China, for instance.
China sees
brain drain.
Brain drain to where?
Canada. Vancouver.
Okay, and does China accept
also
skilled workers from other places?
I mean, if you count myself as a skilled worker, I guess there's some, but not that much.
Okay, how much...
I think it's my turn to ask a question. You've had several in a row. You said in your framework that this debate is not
about...
I don't think I called it
a framework.
I'm sorry, you started at the beginning. You said this debate is about the whole world, and we can't use isolated examples. Then you followed that up and said that you can prove that wages are not hurt with your one example from Tonga and New Zealand. So I'm asking you, how should this one example of Tonga and New Zealand prove that no matter what, immigration cannot hurt the wages in developed countries?
Well, we actually give you lots of examples of why wages are going to be increased.
What other examples?
But that Tonga is just an example,
right,
that backs
you
up.
You said
it's
examples
the data
are not a good reason
that
for
backs
decision.
Up the warrant for my claim, which is that people move from developing countries to developed.
So we should vote on warrants and not examples.
Yes,
so
yes.
Your previous question is irrelevant about which countries in Africa.
Because
Thank
that's
you.
Not what my
What's
framework...
What's your next question?
That's not what my framework says, right?
Ask a question.
Do you want,
me.
Would
Thank
you like
you.
To me to reread my framework? My framework says you can't use an isolated incident as a reason why we should we have to weigh big impacts, right? We have to weigh who helps the most people. For instance, we claim that we help half of the world.
Okay, what percentage of the world lives in a developing country?
Well, I don't know.
but
my argument is that 56% of the world has a low is in low income existence.
Great. That leads me to my next follow up question, which is you said that 1 in 5 people live on less than 25 cents per day, and this extreme poverty is of course a morally significant concern for the world.
Correct.
I'm just curious how removing immigration barriers is going to enable people that make less than 25 cents a day be able to afford to immigrate to another country.
That's by allowing the skilled workers to leave.
Okay, so you concede that the skilled workers are going to leave.
Yep.
Okay. Do you have any questions for me?
If I prove that skilled workers leave...
That's a bold move. Let's see if it works.
If I prove that skilled workers leaving is a good thing, do I win the debate?
I mean, since I only have one contention, I guess so.
Okay.
Would you like some prep time?
Nope.
Okay. Send it down.
I don't actually know how long this is, so I'm just going to count it.
That's what I did.
I haven't timed it yet. All right. Okay.
Good. Run distraction.
Okay. He says, brain drain, I have 3 answers to this. Number 1, brain drain has no impact. According to Sebastian Malaby in 2015, African countries with the largest outflows of physicians as a share of total population, such as Algeria, Ghana, and South Africa, tend to have the lowest rates of child mortality. Apparently, enough doctors and nurses stay behind to prevent breakdown. Skilled workers who leave a country do so because they are not utilized fully, so those that are being utilized stay while the rest move to other countries. So if there's any ability to... provide for the skilled workers, then they're going to stay. There's not any impact to the other ones leaving because they're not utilized in the first place. Number 2, forcing skilled people to stay in their country does not make the economy more productive. In order for the Khan team to win this argument, they must prove that decreasing legal barriers to immigration has resulted in lower productivity in high-skilled areas. Not just that the overall economy has decreased, like his Iran example, but in high-skilled areas specifically, that productivity has decreased, because that's the only way that you can prove a causal link between skilled workers leaving and it hurting the economy. 3rd, skilled workers are leaving actually helps the economy. According to The Economist, several economists reckon that brain drain hypothesis fails to account for the effects of remittances and for the beneficial effects of returning migrants, and for the possibility that being able to migrate to greener pastures induces people to get more education. Recent studies of migration from countries such as far apart as Ghana, Fiji, India, and Romania have found support for this brain gain idea. In Lebanon, Lesotho, Nepal, and Tajikistan, and a few other places, remittances are more than 20% of GDP. A skilled migrant may earn several multiples of what his income would have been if he had stayed at home. Plus, the Malaby evidence from our constructive speech says that remittances are 3 times the size of official development aid worldwide. That's $440 billion and dwarfs any potential chance of giving the poorest people in the world the help that they need. Remember, the resolution says on balance for societies. That's what our framework was saying. So that means that the pro impacts outweigh any small negative effects from migration of skilled workers. 2:15. I ad-libbed a little.
You ad-libbed a little?
But, you know, just to apply to his case. That's all.
Okay, I don't have a block to your case.
Yeah.
I probably should get one.
But, you know, the point was brain drain, so...
That's right. Okay. So, Josh had a few answers, okay, to my brain drain contention. What were they?
Not so productive.
No impact.
Why is there no impact?
Because they utilize the people's talents.
Okay. The people's talents are underutilized where they live currently, okay? What's the term for that? There's a term for it. Does anyone know?
Not.
There's a cleverer term. Cleverer? More clever?
Cleverer.
Brain waste. Okay. That's the idea of brain waste, right? Skills that are underutilized. This can happen on both sides of the topic, okay? I have arguments, the con side of this debate about brain drain also has arguments about brain waste, right? Because sometimes you could argue that too many high-skilled people end up in moving to the same place where they also can't utilize their skills, right? So if all of the people that are good at computers from the whole world move to Silicon Valley, they might not have enough jobs in Silicon Valley to use all of their skills, okay? That would be my side of the argument. So I might, if I'm trying to defend against his attack, remember, if I'm the second rebuttal speaker, I need to do two things. I need to rebut his case, but I also need to try to react to his rebuttal of my case, all right? And so that would be one of the things that I might try to point out if I was responding to that part of his argument. But it's a pretty compelling argument, and there's some evidence for it. What else did he say? What else was it? What else did he say against my brain drain argument? Productivity. Can you explain that? What do you mean?
If you force people to stay in your country, they don't.
Why not? Is that the first point or the second point?
Second.
Is it the second point?
Yeah. Well, kinda.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you explain the second point? I think you use the word productivity in both, so it's a little bit confusing.
So, number two is forcing skilled people to stay doesn't make them more productive, right? His argument is that we need legal barriers in order to prevent this migration of skilled people so that the skilled people will stay and work in that country. But I'm placing a burden on him to prove... Like, I think I have evidence that says that this is not the case, right? I mean, that's kind of what my argument above was, that, like, when people leave, they're not utilized. But I'm also trying to force him to prove that staying in the country, they will be able to use their skills, and it will make them more productive, and it will actually solve the problems that he's talking about, right? Because he's trying to use his argument to basically solve my impact, right? My impact is... Like, we want to solve poverty in developing countries. We want to, like, increase the overall economic well-being of developing countries. So his brain drain argument is that, well, the only way to actually do that is to force the skilled people to stay there and grow the economy. So I'm saying, well, you have to prove that if the skilled people stay there, they're going to grow the... Right? Because the skilled people are there right now. And there's problems, so they're trying to leave. So, like, why does... the status quo solved. That's my question.
We're using the Haiti. Using Haiti.
Haiti?
Yeah, Haiti.
No. No? Wait. Never said Haiti. That second point is an analytic. It doesn't have any evidence with it. I just put a burden on him.
It's just his own analysis. Third argument is what? What was his third argument? What kind of argument was his third argument? Nope. Your next guess should be different than the second one. Anyone know what the third argument was? Okay, what kind of argument is that? There's four kinds of responses. What's it called? What did I say was bad? And what did he say? What kind of argument is that? Impact turn. Okay. Yeah, impact turn. Bad is good, good is bad, right? Okay, so he said brain drain is good because it causes brain gain. What were his reasons? Anyone catch his reasons?
Yeah. There's a bunch of them. And if I'm
Ricky, what were his reasons?
For brain drain?
No. What were his reasons why brain drain is good?
My turn.
Because they're pretty good.
If he goes for brain drain, this is like my number one argument that I'm coming back to in the summary, right?
Is it like more beneficial to the whole international?
Yeah, right. But my question is, what are the reasons that support that idea? He gave three of them. One of them is it creates an incentive for education, right? You're going to work harder to get more educated because you're like, if I do that, then I can get out of this place, right?
Can you use the evidence of Einstein?
What?
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein. What house? That? What do you mean the evidence of? The example of Albert Einstein as an immigrant.
But he's an immigrant, doesn't mean, like, I mean, he immigrated from, like, what? Switzerland? I know, but, like, still, he could be used as an example.
But why did he need to leave to be Albert Einstein?
Because
couldn't he have made those same discoveries
if
where
he made
he
the
left,
same
where
discovery
he stayed?
In Germany, then he's going to destroy the world.
But I don't think all developing countries are Nazi Germany.
Yeah, I know, but like, can we...
Some of them, surely. Yeah. But
Nazi Germany was already a very well-developed country.
Uh-huh.
I say,
yes, but still, for immigrants, Albert Einstein can be used as an example.
Albert Einstein is an example of a smart immigrant. That is true.
Yes.
Definitely so.
And beneficial
so.
To the whole.
I did not reference...
Right, but the argument we are having here is not like, are there smart people in the world, yes or no? Do they sometimes immigrate, yes or no? The question is, does their immigration overall help or hurt the global development in the economy, right? So I think Albert Einstein's a good example to point to maybe on some other debates on this topic, but I'm not sure exactly how to connect it to this one. But yes, education is one, right? What's another reason why it might be good for high-skilled workers to leave? I mean, kind of, but that's not what he said.
The correct allocation of societal resources?
No.
Uh-oh.
Flowing is fundamental. Okay. He said remittances. What's a remittance?
Fundamental flaw.
Fundamental flaw.
Fundamental flaw.
There's a fundamental flaw in your debate techniques because you did not flow
like
in speech,
kind of like
and you can only respond to arguments if you have a record of them and understand them.
I was actually using
okay.
the fundamental flaw for like twice.
I was debating
flaw.
Dominican team.
Huh?
Fundamental flaw, yes.
Okay, what's your point?
So funny.
Huh?
So funny.
So funny?
Yeah, when we were like debating the Dominican
there's like
team.
Ted, he always says,
yeah.
I'll point out the fundamental flaw.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We're cutting all of this, by the way.
Right. This can't be used on the podcast. What are the other... We're not going to cut this. We are going to release to the public that none of the people in this room knows how to flow.
No, we didn't even flow.
Shimahoya!
No,
wait,
no
Shima.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I was gambling.
I did.
I mean, you were gambling. Okay.
He's
okay.
Even
that's
worse.
Hilarious.
Let me. Here, we'll show the people in this room. We'll shame them. Right?
Yeah. Yes, good idea. Good idea.
Oh, look at all of these people. None of them. Slowly.
Say hi to the camera.
Hi, I'm drinking.
There's Vivian. She's trying to hide. So now everyone's going to know that you don't flow, and your parents are going to know how you talk. That's messed up. Okay, so he had two other arguments. One is remittances. What is a remittance? Remittance is when someone sends money to their family back home, right? They're an immigrant. They go abroad. They make more money because in developed countries, the pay is higher. And then that helps the original country where they left because they send money back home.
Yes.
Okay? An important part of that debate is how, if you look at the literature, okay, at the end of this we're going to give you some evidence, or we're going to put it up online that you can download, okay, that includes the contention that I read and his block and some additional evidence, okay? And if you look through that, you're going to see that a big question is whether the money that gets remitted back home from my side, whether it helps the development of that country or not, okay? How is it actually spent? Is it invested in ways that help the economy, or is it spent in ways that don't really contribute that much to development, okay? And there's a bunch of back and forth in the literature about that. That's important. But there's a lot of good reasons the pro can argue that remittances help the economy. There's some pretty good evidence for the con on this point as well. One other argument he said about why brain drain is good was what? Any guesses?
No.
You want me to read the card again?
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Try again.
Number three, skilled workers leaving actually helps their country's economy.
Slow down.
Several economists reckon that the brain drain hypothesis fails to account for the effects of remittances, for the beneficial effects of returning migrants, and for the possibility that being a migrant, being able to migrate to greener pastures, induces people to get more education.
Okay, what was the second one?
I forgot.
And short-term memory loss?
This is...
I recommend a doctor.
Me too.
Okay, the second one is what? Returning migrants, okay? There's a fancy brain term for that, too, in the immigration literature. It's called brain circulation, okay? What is this idea? Why would that help developing countries? What does that mean, returning immigrants? What kind of immigrants go that are skilled people, they leave, they immigrate, and then they come back? What kind
like
of people?
People that have already succeeded. Like, people that have already succeeded.
Okay.
People that have enough money to retire, I guess, back to their own country.
Okay, that's one kind of people, right? Maybe they go, they make a bunch of money, then they come back and they retire. That's maybe one group. What's another group? Huh? What kind of workers, though? What kind of people? What are they going abroad to do besides... studying, okay. I'm talking about you guys. All right.
Oh.
Right? Many of you might go study, okay, where you get more skills, brain train, okay? And then you might also go, and even if you go to work, you might work there and get more experience at applying and using your skills, and then you circulate those ideas back to your country, okay, when you bring them back. You bring back the ideas and the experience and the training that you can apply in your own development.
There's a few examples, a few good examples of this that I've found so far. One is India. India trains their tech workers, and then the tech workers go abroad, and they've been able to come back and bring back, one, tech skills, but also, like, they made a tech industry in India that was able to compete and was able to, like, get a foothold in the global tech sector because they had the reputation from working in Silicon Valley in the first place, right? That, like, people trusted them.
I don't know. Did you quote that one? I doubt it.
I mean, I haven't... I have the card. I didn't read it in this...
Okay. Yeah. Right.
But like that's an example, right? So, the skills and the training that you get from working abroad actually can allow you to build industries in your own country.
Why is that a particularly helpful example?
India is a developing country.
Okay. Yes. Another reason why it's a particularly helpful example. In this particular debate, why would it be helpful for him to have that evidence in this debate? You guys didn't flow. So, I guess I'll just tell you, okay? I used India as an example for my side of the debate, okay? So if he can counter that directly and say, actually, those people that left India have contributed more positively back in the other direction, then that would be pretty useful evidence for him in the debate, okay? Because my evidence when it talked about India just was about the link. It said India proves that if you remove barriers, a bunch of people that are smart are going to leave India, all right? But it doesn't really have a lot of details about what ultimately the impact on India's development was from that, okay? It suggests that it would be bad, but doesn't necessarily prove it. Okay, so... as we said, there's some evidence that you're going to be able to get from us from this that you can look through, okay? Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Hopefully this was helpful. And,
You've been listening to the Contention One podcast.
If you have any comments or questions, please email us at c1@debatechina.com. That's C as in contention, 1 as in the number 1, @debatechina.com.